We have a lot of scientists on this show. World-renowned scientists have been gracing the stage and, you know, for over 3 years now. But there's one particular voice that's looking at this entire conversation from a very different perspective. And I find it really refreshing. And at Ron Johnson's hearings, which was just last week, this voice, I thought, hit on a note that nobody else can. Of course, I'm talking about the former BlackRock financial analyst, Edward Dowd. This is what he had to say at the Ron Johnson hearings.
We'll turn to Mr. Edward Dowd, currently a founding partner of Finance Technologies, a global macro alternative investment firm. Ed has worked on Wall Street most of his career, spanning both credit markets and equity markets. And Ed is, in terms of his financial background, he's looked at financial information to identify a safety signal that is pretty interesting. Ed.
Thank you, Senator. Denmark and the UK have already stopped their vaccination program. Denmark under 50, they've now said no vaccine for anyone that'd rather you get COVID. The Denmark data, if you look at that, that was a disaster and excess mortality. So they saw something clearly that our US health authorities should be seeing as well. The UK's stopped the vaccination for under 12. So my question, Senator, is why are our health authorities still pushing this vaccine if other countries are backing off?
That's a good question.
What I find interesting and curious is this excess mortality continues, the disabilities continue, and our health authorities have no interest in trying to figure out what's going on. This should be a national story in my mind.
Well, you know, I think Edward Dowd is right. This should be a national story. This is a crisis that's taking place. I am honored, and it's a pleasure to actually have Edward Dowd joining me right now. So, Edward, we really had to truncate everybody's ability to sort of give their talking points to get through all the great speakers that were there in Washington, D.C. But what you had to say was so compelling. I was wondering if you would just sort of take us through the long and short of it with a little more detail on what you're looking at and why were you looking there. I was just thinking you were here the beginning of the year back in February, and a lot of this was you were starting to see the beginnings of this, but so much of it seems to be predictions coming true, which is a huge part of being an analyst, I suppose.
Correct, Del, and thank you for having me on. The punchline is this. We have a national security issue going on. And what do I mean by that? The data, the metadata, the insurance company data, the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, the CDC data, the data from across the globe that my partners have collated, it says one thing. Being employed in 2021 and 2022 is detrimental to your health. The bottom line is this. In disabilities, we saw since February, May of 2021, disabilities took off. We call it a Three Sigma event. That's Wall Street speak for something changed that normally doesn't change. We started a new trend, a new slope of the line. We added about 3 million disabled Americans pretty quickly into September of 2022. And when we break down the data, we can analyze it by population cohort. So the punchline is this, the employed of this country who are generally healthier than everybody else in the country experienced a rate of increase in their disability rate of 26% versus the total population of 11%. That's database number one. Let's go to deaths, the separate database, the Society of Actuaries. And I got to just describe this population. It's group life policyholders.
Okay.
And they, generally speaking, are employed in Fortune 500 and mid-sized companies. This is a benefit you get when you onboard to one of these companies. Your first day in human resources, you sign your healthcare forms, pick a plan, then you sign your death benefit that's provided to you by your company, and the insurers provide that benefit, and you sign your beneficiary and you sign the form. And it's usually 1 to 2 times salary. It's kind of one of those throwaway benefits no one ever expects to get. And insurance companies make a lot of money on this. It's low risk because they've done studies on this subgroup of the U.S. population, and they die at a mortality rate of a third that of the general U.S. population in any given year. So this is a good business for them.
Yeah.
Well, in 2021, something happened. This group between the ages of 25 and 64 experienced 40% excess mortality. And The general U.S. population, which is not as healthy, as proven by previous studies, experienced 32%. And my conclusion, using the simple deductive reasoning, is what changed in 2021 and 2022? Only two things changed. A mass vaccination program and employee-employer mandates. And the numbers are stark.
Those are huge increases. And, you know, to think, I mean, again, we've been looking at this from a science perspective, but are you the only one in this space? Because it just seems to me that insurance companies should be paying attention to where their money is going. And then all of the different spaces in which people invest, you know, investors, is this something that you're all alone, or is there a movement to start looking at what should be the most obvious problem the world has ever seen, a rise in you know, as you said, disability and excess mortality, and especially amongst those that are working?
There is movement behind the scenes. So my partner Josh Sterling and I, Josh was at the hearings as well. He was anonymous at first, but he's come forward. We analyzed the insurance data, and behind the scenes, you know, he used to work for Wall Street. He knows a lot of the CEOs. He wrote letters notifying the insurance company of what we've discovered. We sent out 100 letters in the April timeframe. Only about 25 people showed up, and no CEO showed up, but he's, you know, they sent some of their underlings. And out of that group of people, five are working behind the scenes to make the insurance industry wake up to this issue. And the problem is a lot of people are in denial. We're still in the denial stage, especially in the insurance industry. These people move slowly, and they always need more data. But there are plenty of actuaries who reached out to me in the industry who say that my thesis is pretty spot on, probably. I'm of the opinion I'm 100% correct, unfortunately, until someone can come forth with a better explanation. But there is movement there. On Wall Street, you know, I'm hearing people are quietly taking bets on individual industries to take advantage. And I say advantage, and I don't mean it in a way. They want to make money, so they've bought onto my thesis. They're not as public as I am. Right. And they're, you know, betting on stocks that will rise due to perhaps more blood thinners being bought. They're shorting insurance companies, and they're going long funeral homes. At my firm, we're not doing that. We're a global macro alternative hedge fund. We're betting on the growth rates of the economy and general stock markets and bond markets and commodities. So we're going to have an advantage over everybody else, but we're not directly investing. It's something that we're not designed to do, nor do we want to do it.
Let me ask you sort of an odd question, because a huge population watching my show didn't get the vaccine. And then there's those that are watching and are not getting all the boosters, so they're limiting their sort of contact with this. And I think the question is always, is an economy structure? Does this end up affecting me? Like, this, will this have a giant economic effect on everybody? Or is it just insurance companies are going to, you know, have to, you know, pound sand or deal with this themselves? Or what are going to be the sort of downstream repercussions of rising excess mortality, right? You know, fewer and fewer people in the workplace. Where are the places that you look at it? Because as you're talking about, you're sort of looking at the overall economic, you know, power of the country.
Yeah, so that's why we've highlighted this as a national security issue. The numbers aren't small. The numbers are huge. The people that have been newly disabled in the employed segment of the population since February of 21 is about 1.2 million people. You know, the national unemployment rate is 3%, and there's 100 million workers, people who are actually working. So 3 million are supposedly unemployed, but you have 1.2 million disabled. And if you're wondering why you're seeing help wanted signs and why it's hard to hire people and why things are starting to get delayed or what have you, it's gonna have knock-on daisy chain effects, I think, for years to come. I think we're gonna see inflation at a sustainably high rate as we just, you know, effectively poisoned the most able-bodied amongst us and college students. And so that's gonna, you know, the good news is the disabilities aren't affecting everybody, but enough of the population has been injured or died, that these are real big numbers. And we're predicting that we're going to see slow global growth for years to come. We're going to see supply chain issues, and services and goods that you used to take for granted are going to become harder and harder to come by. It's already happening here on Maui. I live on Maui. Restaurants can't staff, so they close early. My car was in the auto body shop, but it never got there because there's part shortages and labor shortages. So my insurance company ended up junking my car. Apparently, this is going on all over across the nation. Wow. So it's slowly, it's like a glacial Mad Max, and it's going to affect everyone in this country. There's no one that's going to escape it, even if you're unvaccinated.
Wow. I mean, it's really, it's scary. And what I find amazing is, and as we sat on that panel, you just, first of all, the fact that we're in the middle of Washington, D.C., this crisis is going on, and there's no senators and congressmen coming. There's like one comes in to drop by and take a look at what's going on. And, you know, I think the sentiment we all had, you know, backstage, behind the scenes, we spent a day together just sharing where we're at. I know you and I was just sitting there thinking, Edward, how do they think they're going to get away with this? I mean, and not only, it's not only that they have made a mistake, which, you know, is possible. Science is possible. They were rushing it. Even if you gave them the benefit of the doubt, in the middle of now just obvious, obvious questions that can only point to, I mean, look, it. Even if there was 10 possibilities, if one of them all starts on the moment this vaccine enters the market, and now we're seeing rises in mortality and disabilities, then you've got to be investigating it. Not only are we not investigating it here in the United States of America, last week, you know, a day or so after our hearing, FDA approves the bivalent booster for babies, I think on the same 8-mouse study. I mean, not even human being. Like, it's just the level of arrogance combined with incompetence or evil. I mean, how do you, I mean, you're a logical person, which is like why I like how you state things. Where is your logic bringing to you on what is actually happening here? How do they think they're going to get away with it? Why aren't they doing anything about it?
Well, so I've been on Wall Street a long time, and I've seen corporate frauds. And in corporate fraud, when they get caught or it starts to unravel, they don't say, hey, I'm caught. They wait until they're stopped, and they continue to tell their lies in their story. They double and triple down. They convince some of the investors that are hanging on to their, you know, hope that they're going to gain back some of their losses. They talk to them and convince them that they're not lying all the way to the end. Mm. And that's why people will hold frauds to zero, because they believe and trust these people. It's classic criminal behavior. So if I take it to this horrific situation we have now, and like you said, whether it was accidental or on purpose, it doesn't matter. At this point, the data that I'm seeing and that my team has presented, the global health authorities are seeing. Denmark's already told us that they're seeing it, but they're not admitting it. So it's basically a cover-up, criminal negligence and crimes being committed right now, because that's what's going on. And they double and triple down until someone stops them. The problem is, in my corporate fraud experience, there were regulators that would come in, okay, and the markets would punish the stocks, and then the regulators would come in. So the problem here is we have a population that doesn't know what's going on, and there's a group of us that do know, and we need to get that information to the rest of the population. I call this the greatest asymmetric information gap of my career, meaning most of the globe doesn't know what's just happened. And we need to get them aware of this. And once we get to a tipping point, like I saw in my career in financial markets, you get enough marginal minds on board, things will change. We don't have anybody coming to rescue us. And I said on a couple shows early on when I got started that I expected them to triple and double down. And it was no shock to me that they approved the vaccine for childhood schedules because they want their immunity. So this is classic criminal behavior, but it's on a, I call it a meta fraud. It's not just a corporation. It's got government players. It's got media players. It's got big tech players. It's a conspiracy of interests. And I think the momentum got going, and they thought that they were going to be swimming in riches and what they were looking to create, which was the COVID surveillance economy. Well, that doesn't appear to be working out so well for them. And the vaccine as tragic as it is that a lot of people are dying and being disabled, it's kind of what has stopped what they're trying to do in their tracks. The evidence is growing. There's enough people and resistance to this that it can't go on. And we just need to get everybody that isn't convinced yet that we're not crazy conspiracy theorists, that Wall Street is slowly starting to look at this. You know, we're trying to start a hedge fund, and the interest in our hedge fund is off the charts, and money capital will flow to this space. And it's sad and tragic, but one thing I've learned is social proof can convince people who don't want to look at the data. And, you know, if you want to continue to go along thinking everything's fine, just know that people are starting to wake up and putting money to work on this, and that hopefully wakes you up.
Yeah, I mean, what you said is so scary, and all of these other situations, whether it's a Bernie Madoff or somebody ripping someone off, or, you know, recently FTX, we're watching the same type of story unfold. You have a regulatory agency stepping in and saying, wait a minute, what's going on here? In this case, the crime, in my mind, is most importantly being committed by that regulatory agency, by the FDA, by the CDC. And we find ourselves in a situation where they're invested in the products themselves. When we look at NIH is making money off of patents. I mean, this whole thing is so corrupt and such a mess. And to your point, we really are all on our own. That's hard for us. I mean, we trust our government. We are raised believing this is the greatest country in the world. I have the greatest government. I'm free. The big problems are taken care of. And now it's a hard pill to swallow, and it's a hard one to sell, both on your part, my part, and all of us that are speaking out. Now, I understand, you know, you're looking at some international data, and you have breaking news as of this morning. What's that about?
Yeah, so we promised that we'd look at other countries. We just dropped the Australian data on our Finance Technologies website under the Humanity Project. It's Finance Technologies, PHI, nancetechnologies.com. Instead of the app, it's
okay,
PHI.
Here we are. Here's the website. If anyone wants to follow all the work that they're doing and lay out these brilliant graphs, financetechnologies.com. All right, and what's happening in Australia?
So bottom line, you know, look, the Australians can go to our website and cut the data a bunch of different ways. We do weekly, quarterly, and yearly. And I just, as soon as the data was dropped, I just went into our website and clicked on excess mortality for Australia for yearly. And, you know, I put in total population, and there you go. So you can see in 2020, they had slightly negative excess mortality. In 2021, they had 4% excess mortality. In 2022, they have 18% excess mortality.
Wow.
So this is Australia. And let's ask this question. We have supposed miracle vaccines, and the virus is now less virulent.
Right.
Correct?
Yeah, Omicron, the big celebration of Omicron is that it's less virulent, less hospitalizations, more people are handling it well. That's what we're being told. Some people have even hypothesized that some great science benefactor out there put out a weaker virus to try and upgrade us. I'm not pushing that conspiracy theory, but that's how sort of kind Omicron has been, that there's like mythology being built around it.
Yeah, correct. So Omicron is a little more than a cold with some complications. But unfortunately, I think if you're vaccinated, there's lots of complications. Mm-hmm. And we know of all the other health problems that are associated with the vaccination. So what's going on in Australia is very curious. At the very least, I don't hear Australian health authorities talking about 18% excess mortality. And it's across all age groups, by the way. You can see here's the age groups right here. Blue is 2020, black is 21, and green is 2022. Excess mortality is taking off. Now, people might ask, why is it taking off in 22? I don't know what went on in Australia. I focused on the U.S. I'm sure there's a story that tells a little bit about why we're seeing this and why the elderly are being more adversely affected than the young. In Europe and the U.S., it's mostly young that mix shift in 21 from old. So there's something going on in Australia that needs to be explained. But again, we have crickets over there in their national media and their health authorities. But 18% excess mortality is a disaster because an insurance executive at One America, Scott Davison, on the results of his company, not blaming the vaccine, of course, said that a 10% excess mortality in young folks is a once in a 200-year flood, a three standard deviation. Right. 40% is off the charts. All of Australia is at 18%, and it doesn't look like it's leveling off. Looks like it's continuing to rise. So Australia, we dropped the data. You guys can use it for whatever you want to do. It's a force multiplier. And again, the data is the data. We haven't, you know, gone into it yet to analyze what exactly the particularities are, but excess mortality is up and to the right. So that's a story right there.
It's amazing. You know, I say to people, I'm always just trying to figure out how to just simplify this. And I'll say to somebody, if you get food poisoning where you're, you know, sick all night, what is the first question you ask yourself? You ask yourself, what did I eat last night, right? I mean, that's it. We all do that. There's no question about it. It's amazing under these circumstances when you're seeing people die at skyrocketing rates after what was supposed to be a deadly pandemic has passed. And it doesn't appear that anyone in authority is asking the question, what did we eat last year? What did we do last year? What was different? And again, you could try to look at a couple of confounding issues, but as you're saying, when you look across all the data, there is one glaring issue, which is this totally, almost completely untested product, a technology that had never been injected into human beings before, that alters, you know, could potentially alter DNA, certainly messes with the cells in your body, and is you know, prone by its nature to cause autoimmune issues and weaknesses, and yet that's the one thing for sure all these people will say, just put that in the closet, put that away. We definitely know it's not that. Even to the point where I'm starting, and one of the things that you're probably seeing are these headlines now. Like even the reporter at the soccer game, the World Cup, you know, the reports are now coming in that he had an aortic aneurysm or something, and they're saying, but it wasn't caused by the vaccine. I mean, in some ways that says to me, it's that bad now that you're even having to mention what you know is on everyone's minds, and you're part of the propaganda to stop it. Now, I don't know if or not the vaccine had anything to do with it, but just the fact that it's becoming a part of the dialogue shows us that at least in reporting, they're realizing we're going to have to start addressing this because we can't look the other way, which is, I want to talk about your book because that's one of the things I love about your book, your brand new book coming out. Was it right now, today, yesterday? Where are we at, Edward, on this?
It was the 13th. So it's available hard copy and ebook as of the 13th of December.
Cause Unknown, the Epidemic of Sudden Deaths in 2021 and 2022. Folks, I'm going to tell you, we've had a lot of great books on here, great writers. I think this, for those people that are just, you're just having difficulty getting through to them, or, you know, well, my doctor says, my scientist, the moment you sort of open this up and you just, you know, a couple pages in, what Edward, what you're doing is all of these headlines I'm seeing, like, this is what I'm seeing on my Facebook page. This is like, died suddenly, you know, sudden death, dead in their sleep. And you are in your book just laying it out. It's so compelling. I don't know how, it's like a coffee table book. How does anyone put that down? You are doing something that no one's done in the book. They allude to it, but you're showing us, folks, here are the headlines. Do you, Evan, you're asking the appropriate question here, which is, you know, when do we remember medical practitioners? When do we remember athletes collapsing on the field? And you sort of start in that space, which is so brilliant, and then take this book into, you know, if I'm a betting man, which is actually what I do for a living, here's how these bets start to go in the financial markets. What inspired you to sort of approach the book that way? Because it's very, is pedestrian right the word? It's so tangible to your average person.
So, you know, I'm a metadata guy. I'm a Wall Street analyst. A lot of that stuff is dry. And, but I do a fairly good job of trying to explain it and size it for people. But I was approached in August, mid-August of this year by Gavin DeBecker, who wrote my afterword. And he pitched the book to me and he said, your data is amazing. Your background is amazing. Not amazing in that I'm amazing, but it's a different perspective. Yeah. Because there's a lot of scientists and doctors that have a narrative, and their narrative, the ones that we like are correct. But I'm looking at the metadata and different data sources. And Gavin suggested we start going into the sudden athletic deaths, which got me interested, by the way, in the first place, in figuring out the vaccine had an issue. And we wanted to, through pictures and stories and QR codes, really bring the human element here. Like, when you analyze metadata, it's a number in a spreadsheet, but these are real human beings. These are real families affected by the tragedy. And we wanted to highlight how abnormal this is and how rare it is and how disgusting what's going on is, and put a human face on this and honor the dead. This is tragic. And, you know, the book is about 210 pages long, but it's not, it's a quick read because the data analysis that I do is brief for a reason. We want people to get through it quickly. It's really, you know, conclusive as far as I'm concerned. And I lay it out in the way that a Wall Street research report would be written and come to my conclusion that it's the vaccines. The conclusion of everybody else is it's ABV, anything but the vaccine. Right. But none of those explanations make any sense. So this book was designed and written with the person who doesn't know and isn't convinced in mind. I mean, the red meat crowd and the echo chamber will like it, but this is really intended to convince someone that this is true. It was not normal before 2021. It's happening. It's tragic. And at this point, it's a cover up and a crime. I conclude with that. And I purposefully leave out the who and the why, because that would assault people's worldview. It's speculation on my part. I'm just presenting data and facts. And then I say, this seems to me to be a cover up at the very least.
And I think, frankly, folks, this is a stocking stuffer. I know it may seem depressing in some ways, like, why would I want to give this to someone on Christmas? But if you think about what we're involved in here, if you've been watching The High Wire, if you read this book yourself or look at any of the data that Edward Dowd is sharing on his website, you have to know. We know what's going on here, which means this isn't going to go away. Right now, all of these things that you're doing, when you're communicating with your loved ones or giving them a book that really matters, you are putting a time capsule into their life that you will be able to say, as it's all going south, you know, at least I tried to show you this. They cannot blame you for not having warned them. And for those you get through to, you get to stop them from getting that next booster or moving deeper and deeper into this issue that is going to take so many lives. It's already historic. And so that's why I think this book is so great. I really do think that this is a book that it's a page turner, because first of all, you're reading the headlines, and we live in this thought bubble right now. I think about this. I know that my family, that are, you know, liberal progressives in Boulder, Colorado, their Facebook page is designed to show them everything that they believe in, not the same headlines that I'm seeing. So if I hand them this book, they can go, are you kidding me? Is this really happening? That's what we have to recognize, is social media has done such a great job of sort of keeping us in our own thought cloud, in our own community. This book, I think, breaks that. It immediately, you go, oh my God, there's these headlines. And then you get an explanation, not from some wackadoodle, a guy that bets, you know, is known for working on financial interest and breaking this down to see how do we make money off of it. You must talk to other financial analysts. Have you found that, you know, I'm sure a lot of them get vaccinated. Does money talk? When this conversation, when you approach it from that perspective?
It does. I have an anecdote from several weeks ago. A friend on Maui who doesn't live here anymore came to visit. He got vaccinated, thought I was kind of a kooky, crazy conspiracy theorist. Then he heard I wrote a book, and he kind of laughed about that. And then someone showed him a video of that I did with Steve Bannon about this problem. Then he started giving the excuses that we all hear. Oh, it's due to suicide. It's due to drug overdoses. And I said, hey, listen, it's my day off. Buy the book. And oh, by the way, I'm meeting with some gentlemen from the hedge fund community. They want to help us raise assets for what we're doing. And as soon as he heard that, his face turned white and he ran out of there, because it became somehow that broke the spell.
Right.
It just broke the spell for him. And I find that social proof, sometimes a lot of people want to be liked by everybody. And that's what I think is the tragedy of this, is a lot of people got the jabs because of their tribe identity. Well, you know, you might want to get out of your tribe identity if you know Wall Street's starting to focus on this. And I want to give an example of what happened during the Great Financial Crisis. Goldman Sachs was up to their eyeballs in subprime debt. And they were a big proponent of subprime debt. Then they noticed that something was wrong. And within a day or two, they went the other way. They sold all their subprime debt. Then they started shorting subprime debt. And so Wall Street doesn't care about this. If Wall Street smells money, they'll turn. You know, you can understand something about money and capital. It has a life of its own. It's a force of nature, like gravity, like the oceans. It flows where it wants to flow. And these people will, you know, even though they just all got jabbed themselves, if they can make money, they'll do it. I think they're slowly waking up. And, you know, Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley, which led Wall Street and corporate America into vaccine mandates, they were the first premier investment banks to do this. They've quietly dropped their mandates this summer. So that should give you pause. Something's going on Wall Street. They may not admit it because they have legal issues. And I'm suspecting a lot of the CEOs and higher ups all got jabbed enthusiastically themselves. But they'll make money if this is what they think is happening.
Well, I think it's such an interesting perspective, and it does shine light. And it is a way to talk to friends that maybe just can't get into the science. They've been jabbed. But when you start realizing, wait a minute, there's people actually now investing in the fact that this vaccine is a failure, that does turn your head. Edward Dowd, I want to thank you for taking the time. I know you're busy. You're doing incredible work. You're so well spoken on this. And it's one of those painful I told you shows. I mean, you were warning us early on. And, you know, so far it's you're dead on with where this is going. We've been a part of that too. It just seems so obvious to those of us that are looking at it. It's shocking how many people still are blind to it, but that's on us. I think be like our work is to get it out there. I'm glad you've made this book so accessible. So continue the great work, and we look forward to speaking again soon.
Thanks a lot, Del. You know, it's really an honor to speak with you. You've been on this subject so early, so right. And, you know, it's just an honor to be able to present on your show. So thank you.
Thank you. All right. Take care. We'll talk to you soon.